Hi, this is Phil Lairness, sitting alongside my wife, Lily Lairness. As we travel through the third decade of the 21st century, it's good to know that the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions continue to produce a minimum of 4 hours of weekly audio goodness on Siren Radio and SouthsideBroadcasting.podbean.com.
And it's time now on Southside Broadcasting and sometimes Siren Radio as well, of course, for another Tale from Tipperary with Jenny Finch.
There are some advantages that come with age, and one is a wealth of experience. My remarkable partner, Jackie, had in another life been in the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. Refusing to panic, she rang the Stranraer Hotel and explained several times, using increasingly small words, we were not travelling for leisure or pleasure. This was an essential trip, allowed under the regulations, and we really had no choice but to leave our home on the 8th of December. A subtext, not articulated but lurking just around the corner, was the threat to camp out in their car park overnight if necessary. It worked. Now we had the problem of the sale. There was not enough time to begin the whole process again, with viewings, surveyors, mortgage assessors, solicitors. But a number of our previous viewers had expressed a keen interest in the house and sent in offers. So we sent out messages. If you can guarantee to complete in less than 4 weeks, the house is yours. Much to our astonishment, that worked too. All we had to do was finish packing and get ready to go. We had found a removals firm in Ireland who claimed to be expert packers and experienced in handling antiques and fragile goods. If I do not name them, you will have an inkling that these claims fell somewhat short of the truth, but more of that later. The move was planned for 2 trips, a week apart, with the storage room already arranged some 7 miles from the cottage in Ireland. We'd done a lot of packing ourselves, but there were still large areas of the house needing an efficient and professional hand. When the remover arrived, he took everything we'd got ready, walked around the house, and said he'd be back to finish the job on the 8th. We were not sure how he planned to do it, but he was confident and drove off after barely 4 hours. The next part of the move still gives me bad dreams. When we looked around, we found there were several items missing. 2 green boxes from the pet crematorium were gone. We'd lost Trevor, our cat, and Saffron, our oldest dog, during the year, and had not had time to find suitable urns for them. And a red folder was gone from the table, containing the papers and passports for 2 of the dogs. We were frantic, distraught, and close to despair, as without the papers, we couldn't take our dogs abroad. Already ill and exhausted from stress and overwork, Jackie had a relapse and was unable to do anything for most of the next week. Sensibly, she slept and recovered in time to drive to the vets, where the wonderful Len Metcalf issued 2 new replacement passports. We could only hope the green boxes were safe in the first load. We would not have managed as much as we did without our wonderful friends. Always a tower of strength, Lynn turned up every day to help us manage the dogs, sort and pack. As the final deadline loomed and it was obvious I would not get everything done, 2 other saviours materialised. Paul and Sue offered some much needed muscle, Paul, and organisation, Sue. Together they helped us salvage something from the disaster of the house, and we were thankful we would have a professional packer to clear the china cupboards and take down some of the furniture. Ha! When the removals man arrived, 4 hours late, it became obvious he was not expecting to pack anything, even though I had phoned and warned him we were way behind and we hadn't been able to get any more boxes. After he threw a hissy fit, we walked him round and showed what was needed. We had been due to leave at the time he finally arrived. 4 hours to help and answer questions built into the day had seemed enough, and we had a long journey ahead. Instead, we had to rush through what was left, trusting him to make proper notes. As we set off, late, shaking with fatigue and sick with worry, we were buoyed up by the unexpected rush of kindness shown by friends and neighbours. We had cards, wrapped gifts, kind words, and people waving from doors and windows as we finally left our home in the northeast. It was 2 days short of 31 years since we'd arrived, and as we drove through the increasingly dark and stormy weather, the enormity of the whole enterprise finally hit home. December is never a good time to move house. We should know. All of our moves have taken place in December due to differing circumstances. This December, however, was the hardest of the lot. We drove off in the car loaded with bedding, 3 dogs, and the essentials of life for the first few days. It was just after 2 p.m. and already getting dark as rain began to fall. We had a sat-nav, something I have resisted for years, and after this journey, I feel fully justified in my prejudice. It assured us our journey was 253 miles to the hotel. The miles ticked off as we ploughed through what developed into a real storm, but although we'd followed its snooty voice without question, a glance at a real map showed we were nowhere near Stranraer when it reached a mere 10 miles to go. By the time we got to the hotel, it was almost 7:30 at night, and we'd driven an extra 80 miles, and the sat-nav was now telling us we were still 10 miles away. The hotel was dark, with just a faint light in the reception area. At first glance, it could have passed as a set for The Shining. We hauled ourselves up the entrance steps and across the lobby, footsteps and dog's claws echoing in the gloom. I think we must have looked awful, as the lovely receptionist persuaded the kitchen staff to stay on and make us something to eat. We staggered to our rooms and collapsed, feeding the dogs first and covering the bed with a blanket to guard against paw marks. The food was excellent, delivered to our door, and the dogs seemed happy despite such a disruptive and strange week. We slept. Oh, how we slept. The next morning, we left the echoing, empty hotel that had been so kind and welcoming and headed for the port. The sat-nav, obviously inhabited by a malicious spirit of some kind, sent us round in circles for 10 minutes until we turned it off and navigated ourselves, arriving just in time to load. The worst part was leaving the dogs in the car. We had chosen Stranraer to Belfast as it was only 2 hours. Two of the dogs are good, experienced travellers, but the youngest had never done anything like this before. We settled them in their crates, left little treats hidden in their blankets, and stumbled upstairs, just hoping they would settle and sleep. On board, the staff were lovely. There were coffee, tea, and pastries available, and excellent seating areas. We chose a place away from the televisions, which was just as well as the BBC was announcing new travel restrictions and an imminent lockdown in Northern Ireland. If necessary, we would claim ignorance. It was too late now, and we had nowhere to go back to. As we pulled away from the dock and set out across the Irish Sea, I felt an overwhelming rush of emotion and began to cry. It was a mixture of relief, exhaustion, fear, mainly for the dogs, and grief for all we were leaving behind. Looking back now, I can still feel that pain, lessened by time, but still enough to hurt. I'm only surprised I didn't cry earlier, but I think we were both hanging on so tightly we didn't dare relax. The dogs were, of course, fine when we got back to the car. The little Trojans had just curled up and gone to sleep with no fuss and less worry than I had experienced. As we drove out of the port, we passed a large group of police and customs officials who were setting up cones and signs for the new checkpoint. We drove on, trying to look suitably respectable, which was not easy under the circumstances, not stopping until we reached the service area on the motorway. Here we grabbed sandwiches and water and walked the dogs before heading for the border and our final destination. The journey was quite uneventful after that, enlivened only by another storm and the bastard sat-nav lopping another 80 miles off the journey distance. Oh, and a Gardaí checkpoint on the motorway outside Dublin. Although it was rush hour, every car was stopped, causing a long tailback. When we got to the front of the queue, a very young and very wet officer looked into the car, raised his eyebrows at the contents. By this time, we probably looked more like car dwellers than respectable travellers. "Can I ask you the purpose of your journey today?" he asked, raising his voice over the barking. I was very tired and in no mood to be stopped so close to achieving the impossible. "We are moving," I said. "We have rented a cottage near Nina and we are going there." There was a pause as he digested this before stepping back and waving us on. "You have a safe journey then," he said. That was when I knew it just might all work out.
And there we have it, another classic example there of Jenny Finch and the third part of her sequence there. And we've also been joined from North Carolina by Jessica Burtis. Are you well, Jessica? And has this actually helped sort of, at least if nothing else, say, I'm never going to move at all, ever?
Hey, I'm a bit sick, but this brightened my day. Hello, I enjoyed reading this. I'm sorry it's such a cacophony of just mishaps during this move. But it seems like you're taking it all in stride. I completely agree. I think navigation systems were just made to antagonize humanity. They're always trying to do something evil.
Yeah. And for her first ever experience. Sorry, Jenny, I was just going to say, for our first ever experience of your Tales from Tipperary, Volume 3, of course, as we mentioned, Gabriella Van Genien's All the Way from the Delightful World of Suffolk. I mean, Gabriella, have you ever experienced this kind of move, or is this a case of no, never?
No, luckily I haven't I've only moved house once, but it was literally just around a street. I can't imagine moving, but moving during the pandemic as well. I can't imagine what you were saying, the stresses and everything, and as well with three dogs as well,
they're only small dogs.
Oh, they're small. What breed are they?
Tibetan Spaniels. They look a little bit like a cross between a Chihuahua and a Pekingese, but they're three times as tricky.
Let's open it up then. Jessica, any questions you'd like to put to Jenny about her current life and times as we in England, I should say, just coming to terms with the latest announcement from Downing Street and Boris Johnson saying it probably could get a lot worse. Prepare ourselves for some bad news because there could well be a winter lockdown on its way, especially now Chris Whitty has actually said that we'll all need to have booster jabs. So there we are.
Oh no, I'm so sorry. I hope this all gets sorted. I feel like it's just one thing after another. I keep hearing about the conditions in the UK, it'll be lifted and then not. I hope it all gets sorted so you guys can have some closure with this. But I'm curious, Jenny, I've never actually moved myself, but hearing you talk about it, it kind of made me realize how emotional people talk about how moving is. So probably just wondering, what was your rock kind of to help you deal with this emotional time during this move, if there was one?
My partner is magnificent and we helped each other through it. If one was really ill, then the other one stepped in and helped. But also there was an imperative to move. We felt we really didn't have any choice. We would not have chosen to do it in the pandemic, let's be honest. That's just mental. But a wise man once said, you never know how brave you are until you have no choice. And we found that to be very true. A lot of people have gone, you're so brave. No, we had no choice. We've done the best we can with what we had. And I have to say, spoiler, we got lucky. We did in the end. We earned it, but there you go.
Gabriella, points from your own journalism inquiry-based things. What would you like to put to Jenny, who is also a journalist and wrote extensively, of course, for the joys of the Darlington and Stockton Times? It's never been the same since you left, Jenny.
Thank you.
Jenny, I just wanted to ask you, moving during a pandemic, you know, like you wouldn't have done that, you know, pretty much anyway. But I was just going to ask you, how have things been? Have you managed to settle in Tipperary? And like, how has it been like with the neighbours and everything? Like, is it like, obviously, is there still a lockdown in Ireland, but can you like communicate and meet each other or?
We don't have any immediate neighbours now because we found a place that's in rural Ireland. But a lot of people cycle and walk up the road outside and everybody knows everybody else. And everybody stops and goes, hello, how are ye? And we stand on one side of the gate and they stand on the other. And we are getting to know people. People are incredibly friendly and very, very helpful. They've been lovely.
And you mentioned, obviously, leaving the Northeast, leaving Saltburn, of course, home these days with Jenna Warren to a Guardian mentioned a small bookshop, which she was very pleased to obviously promote from that point of view. Although gone are the days possibly where we'll actually have Book of the Month live from that small bookshop. Remember those days when we used to do out on the road? Astounding. But is it possible to compare the two kind of environments in terms of friendliness and so on? I mean, you said you were quite surprised when you left Saltburn, how sort of emotional you got.
Yes, it's similar in some ways. People are a lot less stressed over here and a lot more relaxed over here, and everybody fishes around to find a link so they can connect themselves with you, which doesn't happen that much in England anymore. There's very similar sort of shopping experiences in Nina, lots of independent shops and so on. And people in Saltburn we got to know, and I do miss them very much. I miss our friends, but we're making new friends here. And I think that's a good thing, especially at our advancing years.
And I got to ask the question, what was the perspective on the G7 super spreader event that obviously Kerry Johnson and company actually like to run recently in England?
Do you have a button you can press? Really, it was, oh, Jesus, mental him. What's he doing in charge of the country for sake? There's your button.
So obviously really, the Irish feel as strongly about Bojo as indeed various citizens in North Carolina possibly felt about Donald's, perhaps. But yeah, there we are. And Jessica, is it still anarchy in North Carolina or South Carolina?
Always. It just always is at this point. It's just always crazy here. But yeah, we're just enjoying some summer weather. So I feel like everyone's just like calmed down a bit. They can get outside. I feel like they're not indoors watching the news all the time, so it's fine for right now, but we'll see when winter comes.
They can purchase a possible raffle or get a raffle ticket if they have a vaccine, and then that raffle ticket might lead them to be able to win a rifle, so it's all win-win. I think, which is great. That's particularly, I think, West Virginia or West Virginia. Yeah, that's great. So Gabriella, you've had your jab now. Do you feel, as we were speaking on a previous program, that in terms of that, do you feel all's well with the world, or is it a case of you're going to be on to your mum and dad said, we want to move now?
Well, I'm hoping, like, with the jab and everything, things can get a bit more back to normal, hopefully, because I don't know about all of you, but I just need to get back to a bit more normality, really, to be honest, even if it's just going to like actually being able to go into a cinema and sit down and just watch a film, you know?
Of course, it may well be, Gabriella, that you're the last ever cohort of students who remembers what real face-to-face education was actually like. It's great. Still, never mind. Like, we continue in our own way. Just briefly, of course, we got the European Championship in our own sort of Southside package. We're doing well. Jenny, you're currently joint top of that particular leaderboard. So pleased with that?
Amazed. What has gone wrong?
Well, you know, it just shows that there's quality there. Jessica, I don't know what's happening with respect to Poland and Spain and such like, but clearly they have just let you down at present.
I just cursed myself being so mean to Sweden. So like the rest of my teams are just messed up. And in the email that you sent, you were like, oh, and Jessica's, you know, 2 points behind this fourth place. And my mom's like, that's such a nice way to say that you're dead last.
Well, you know, it's important, but it could all change, and that's another program for another time. Jenny, huge thanks. We'll see you obviously for the next stage of the Euro Predictor Challenge that we're running here, but next Tipperary Tale will be with us presumably in a fortnight, all being well.
That'd be lovely. I look forward to it, Alex, and thank you two for joining.
Thank you.
Time for another Zoomer on the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbeam.com. Keeping the COVID-19 bugs at bay.
Changing laundry detergent, avoiding sunny weather, getting your children to wear gloves, and even avoiding screen time. All possible activities that are taken in terms of actually avoiding flare-ups of eczema, one of the major challenges that we actually have to face with respect to skincare in general. And unsurprisingly, the pandemic has seen an increase in the number of cases of eczema being reported and so on. So who better to actually talk us through some of the ways to actually cope with this, and indeed the findings of this particular report, than skincare expert Dr. Bjorn Herpers. How are you, Bjorn?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
Excellent. Good to connect with your good self. And again, it's one of those stories which really we tend to think, well, yes, I mean, there are lots of conditions that are affected by the environment in which we live, etc. So it's no surprise, really, that the recent survey has found that eczema has also increased in quantity.
Yes, exactly. And especially last year, because this new survey by Gladskin has shown that over a third of parents in the East Midlands say that their child eczema has become worse during the pandemic. So that was really a shocker. We know that a lot of children suffer with eczema, but it has actually gotten worse last year. And as you said, parents try everything, you know, changing the laundry detergent, as you said, but also, you know, limiting their child's screen time. 30% of parents said that they're limiting their child's screen time. And this is not because that's an effective measure, but because they're at their wit's end, you know, the parents, they really are at their wit's end about how to go about and help their children. So I think it's time, you know, to educate how you best can help your children when they suffer with eczema.
Absolutely. And although we wouldn't necessarily say it's a bad thing to actually ration screen time and so on in certain instances, I think the connection between the two is not necessarily there. However, if we look at the science, and this is certainly where you come in, it does actually sort of impact in terms of our skin microbiome, and indeed the importance of the skin, largest organs in the body, covers everything. It all works through that system. It's permeable. But share with us, Bjorn, what is the skin microbiome and why is it so important, obviously, in caring for?
Yeah, well, the skin microbiome are trillions of bacteria living on your skin, and they should be there because they have an interplay and they cooperate and work together. You know, the bacteria work together, but also work together with your skin, you know, to produce, for example, vitamins, but also to really protect and keep your skin healthy. But when this balance of your skin microbiome is disrupted by overgrowth of bad bacteria, and especially Staph aureus bacteria are known to do so, then this could trigger inflammation. For example, in eczema, 70 to 80% of all eczema sufferers have this bad bacterium Staph on their skin. Just prior to a flare, this bad bacterium overgrows all the good bacteria, and this really ignites the typical inflammation of eczema flares with the itchy and the redness, and this leads to a vicious cycle of itching and scratching and itching and scratching. I think parents can relate to this, to sleep deprivation in their skin, in their children. So knowing that there is actually a bacterium driving this inflammation is a really fairly new understanding of the last few years. And eczema is about a skin barrier dysfunction. And this barrier dysfunction makes your skin more prone to triggers. And these triggers ignite the immune system to get this inflammation. And we know that we should moisturize the skin, to get this barrier function a little bit working again. And we know that you can suppress the inflammation with steroids, but you don't want to use them all that long. Our survey showed that 90% of parents go to the GP, get steroids, but they discontinue it after a few days or after a few weeks because they don't want to use it every day. But now we know that these bad bacteria are into play. We can actually do something about the trigger, and this is really revolutionary and new.
The key word, Bjorn, seems to be balance. I mean, we know about a balanced diet. We know that if you intake copious amounts of sugary drinks, sweets and so on, you can have flare-ups and your body is not going to respond positively to that. But again, as you've just said, in terms of the balance of the skin microbiome, it does seem to be that this is one of the key things that we're looking for to ensure that, as you say, those good bacteria are there. As really there as nature intended to actually act as a good defense against threats and so on.
Exactly. And the way we dealt with bacteria before is with antibiotics, and antibiotics are lifesavers if you have an infection, but they are not suitable to intervene in the microbiome because they lead to resistance, but also they do not distinguish between good and bad bacteria. And at Gladskin, we have developed Staph Effect, and Staph Effect is the world's first enzyme that actually only targets these bad bacteria while leaving the good ones unharmed. And we were able to get this active enzyme into the Gladskin skin products in creams and gels that you can use to moisturize the skin, but also to target these bad bacteria. And by targeting them, you give the good bacteria the chance to regrow again and to get balance again. As you said, balance is the key word here. People know this from the gut. It's exactly the same on the skin. A balanced skin microbiome keeps the skin healthy. So with these new Gladskin products and with the Staph Effect enzyme targeting these bad bacteria, that's a really world's first revolutionary breakthrough in the approach of eczema, free of antibiotics, free of alcohols, free of steroids. I think this is really new. And only 10% of parents know that these bad bacteria play a role in the eczema that their child is suffering from. So I think it's great that we have the opportunity to, get this message across.
Well, hopefully, as I say, we are actually beginning to increase that 10% slightly, at least in today, by actually spreading the word from that point of view, because it is important. This is not an invasive treatment. This is not something that basically necessitates you changing the skin, the detergents, or indeed restricting screen time. It is something which clearly does effectively work and actually sort of solve the challenges. Does it also work again across the ages? Because obviously there are adults who also
have
eczema as well.
Yeah, eczema is a childhood disease, as many children suffer with eczema, but most grow out of it. But, about 5 to 8% of people have eczema in their adult life as well, for years and years on. And it's the same bacterium. It's the same mechanism of action. Mechanism of triggering the eczema. And in fact, in other skin diseases like acne, pustular acne and pustular macular rosacea. It's the same bacterium that super infects the pimples and giving rise to these, you know, really fierce, red, painful pustules. So there the GLATSKIN products also can help. And as you said, right, that's something else, because it's not only the symptoms of itch and pain that is, you know, what people suffer from. They also, because the skin is the largest organ, as you said, and it's visible, they also suffer with, you know, emotional things. And I think that's what parents see in the children also. We found that 1 in 5 children feel embarrassed and actually don't go out. So as you said, children have, during lockdown, of course, you know, the iPads, they were ideal that you could do something and, you know, you could play a game with your friends. But now, you know, hopefully the lockdown the restrictions will go away. Then you hope the children go out again, and, you know, and play with each other. And it would be terrible if you know, children don't go out because they feel embarrassed and they don't want to be just because of their skin condition. So,
Where can people actually find out more about the GLADSKIN survey and the overall reports that we've been talking about today?
Yeah, they can find the information on gladskin.co.uk. And you can find information there on the bad bacterium and staph effect in the GLADSKIN product range, you know, and about tips. What are gentle cleansers for your skin, not disrupting the microbiome? But I think it's also important that you can read the reviews of other people suffering with the same kind of skin conditions as you, and read about how they go about with it and what GLADSKIN did for them or not. And so you get a better understanding, do some research whether your skin condition is likely to be triggered by Staph aureus or not. And then, you know, if you think it is, and with exact eczema it's in 70-80% this bad bacterium plays a role, then you can just try the product because it's free of all these bad things. As I told you, there's no steroids or antibiotics. So
Dr. Bjorn Holkers, we're gonna have to hold you there. Many thanks indeed, huge thanks, and take care. Be for that. Be well. Cheers. Bye.
Lending quality chat and insightful comment for the 21st century, you're listening to the Midweek Drive.
Get, set, cycle. Yes, three very definitive words which clearly actually are vital when it comes to actually keeping ourselves fit and healthy in whichever part of life one finds oneself. And we're delighted now to actually talk about a wonderful innovation that's being put forward to ensure that cycling fitness level continues ever onwards. We're, as I say, particularly pleased to actually speak to Cassie Wills, ACE coordinator, with respect to this particular project, which relates to care homes in particular. Cassie, welcome to the programme. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, I mean, for those of us who kind of are quite happy with a brisk walk, etc., this is quite an interesting sort of line in terms of keeping fit. And obviously, Colin Jackson, who's been promoting this extensively, is one of those cyclists who think, fine, okay, we can't all be like this. But it would seem that what you put into place with respect to your own environment and care homes, etc., is something that fits very much into the Anker Hanover residence experience.
Yes, it does, most definitely. So Anker Hanover are really driven to create the sense of well-being and having fun in later life and making it as active and fun and inclusive as possible. And so we really wanted to make sure that we were providing something that was fully inclusive so that regardless of ability level, we could still get that health and well-being and fitness going on for everyone in our homes.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's one of the reasons Colin Jackson, no mean athlete, as we said, teamed up with Anker Hanover. It's England's largest not-for-profit provider of care and housing for older people. And I've seen some of the videos and they do seem to be actually engaging in a variety of ways to reach this target, which I must admit, I thought, what, 2,102 miles? This is unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. It does seem like it is a massive thing to scale, but actually we're reckoning that we're going to smash that already by the enthusiasm that our residents and our colleagues have had in the past couple of weeks since we sort of launched it in-house, it's been really amazing. I mean, currently I've just walked away from our receptionist who is sat there on reception answering phone calls and cycling on our little floor pedals. So it's a really good way of getting as much movement and fitness as possible. We've got, we've also got what we call a disability bike, which is like a tandem bike, but it's actually side by side rather than one in front of the other. And it means that the resident can be supported in cycling safely, but also have a member of staff there to support them and cycle so that they can get out in our beautiful grounds and enjoy the sunshine whilst they're doing it.
And clearly the benefits, both psychological and physical, are huge with respect to this, because if we don't use the stuff, it will ossify and we'll lose it. And I think it's important yes. to maintain that as we actually head through the journey of life, really.
Yes, most definitely. So it's obviously been, it's been proven how much that physical health affects mental health and vice versa. And so we have to approach it in a holistic way and making sure that what we're delivering doesn't just access the body or doesn't just access the mind, but actually we're covering all bases. And the really good thing about this campaign is that it's connecting our homes. We've got 120 plus homes and sites across England, and what this is doing, this virtual cycle, is making sure that we're actually connecting with the different areas we wouldn't normally have any connection with. So it's building that sense of community as well, which is obviously a really good thing for spiritual well-being.
You mentioned accessibility there, Cassie, and certainly that's something which I was fascinated by, because you've got a range of specially adapted bikes. As you mentioned, you've got specialist foot pedals, you've got memorized technology, virtual cycling platforms, and even the opportunity of actually projecting images using Google Maps of towns or paths onto a screen.
Yes, definitely. We've also got an international element to it as well. So we've got some virtual tours of cities like Paris. We've got St. Petersburg and other beautiful places that they've got a beautiful cycle around. So it actually feels like you're visiting those cities as you're sat in your chair and cycling along on the pedals.
Of course, the goal of 2,156 miles is the same distance as the Tour de France.
Yep.
This could be seen in future years as a qualifier, couldn't it, surely?
Yeah, definitely. I think we've already got some members of staff, and some of our colleagues are already thinking, you know, maybe if I'm doing this, I could actually take part in a proper cycle ride, which is a really fabulous thing to start hearing around the place.
And what about yourself, Kerry? I mean, you mentioned that your receptionist is currently actually sort of pedaling as we speak, so to speak. Is this something which you're sort of up for? Are you a regular cyclist in any case?
So since I had children, actually, I'm not so much of a cyclist, but this has definitely encouraged me to do more. I do love our disability bike, and you will catch me out on the disability bike quite often. I will tend to just sort of pick up a resident and go, you know, come on, let's go cycling, let's have fun. It is really good. But that is the only cycling so far that I have done. But I am definitely enthusiastic to do more, because we have competitions, we've got in-house competitions, and I want to be on that leaderboard.
Well, clearly, I can sense that from the actual sort of responses you're providing today, Cassie. How can people find out more information about the Cycle Challenge and indeed Anchor Hanover? Where would you actually suggest they should go?
So if you go to our website, anchorhanover.org.uk/getsetcycle, you will find more information on there about Anchor Hanover and about the campaign. And a great way to get for the public to get involved, we're asking you to clock your miles, take a selfie, and post it on social media with the hashtag #GetSetCycle, and your miles can contribute to our overall total.
Brilliant. Cassie Wills from Anchor Hanover, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on, and of course, keep cycling.
Yes, thank you.
It's World Sickle Cell Day approaches, a call very much to recognise and support those who suffer from this dreadful condition. Indeed, you might think, well, another condition? We've just come out of the COVID pandemic. Well, that's the case, but it's important to actually acknowledge this. And we're delighted to actually welcome to talk about this challenging case from the Sickle Cell Society. That's the wonderful Philip Houdet. How are you, Philip?
Hi, good. Thank you.
So, I mean, 15,000 people currently living with sickle cell disease in the UK, 270 babies born with sickle cell disease each year, and 94% of people obviously with the condition increasingly worried about the COVID aftermath and various other bits and pieces. Just share with us this whole problem that actually sort of is impacting many of our fellow citizens and more.
Sure. So I guess starting with the basics of sickle cell, because I guess some people may not know what sickle cell is. So sickle cell is a condition which affects the red blood cells. It means the red blood cells, which should normally be round and smooth and kind of look like little tiny donuts, they actually are deformed and become sickle shaped. So like the shape of a sickle. And what it means is that they carry less oxygen. It means that they have a shorter lifespan in terms of the length of life of the cells. And so what it means is that leads to complications, and that could include things like organ damage, joint damage, and severe painful episodes, including strokes in young children can also occur. So there's a whole range of really, really severe side effects and severe symptoms of the sickle cell disease that really impact heavily on people's day-to-day life. And so, as you mentioned, in terms of the pandemic, you know, everybody's been suffering within this period. But if you have sickle cell, you have a reduced immune system. And so on that basis, a lot of people have been shielding, and the government has advised people with sickle cell to stay home during throughout most of the period of 2020 during the lockdown. So yeah, it's been very challenging mentally, particularly for people who are shielding and advised not to leave the house. And also, yeah, there is that anxiety that I guess all of us are feeling at this moment. And it's even heightened, you know, it's even more higher level of anxiety if you have an underlying condition like sickle cell. As I have personally, you know, and I found that it's really challenged me personally on a day-to-day basis.
It's 13 years ago since the United Nations actually adopted a resolution that recognised sickle cell disease as one of the world's foremost genetic diseases. We're now, of course, approaching June 19th, officially World Sickle Cell Day, which is important to raise the awareness and raise the consciousness of that. How positive can we look forward to the future from your own perspective, Philip? Do you think that actually progress is being made in terms of actually addressing this issue?
Definitely, progress is being made. I would say that it's, you know, it's a slow progress. And, you know, we just celebrated in 2019, actually 40 years of having the Sickle Cell Society. So, you know, within that 40 years, there has been significant improvements in things like early diagnosis of sickle cell. You know, previously in decades gone by, people may not know they have sickle cell until they're well advanced in life, you know, and would just write off some of the issues and health challenges they had as just being unexplained, you know. So a lot of people are getting early diagnosed, pre-diagnosis. So people are also able to screen babies before being born. You know, people can also get tested now on the NHS to see if you're a carrier of sickle cell. So, you know, there's advances. I think the awareness still has some way to go in terms of increasing awareness of sickle cell, and also not just increasing awareness of the disease, but what does it mean for people's day-to-day lives? Because sickle cell really is like, I'd call it an invisible illness. Is the kind of illness that, you know, people look normal on the outside. So, you know, you can't see it in the same way that you can see symptoms of some other genetic diseases. But however, somebody can be perfectly well today, and then tomorrow they can be terribly unwell and be bedbound, you know, for the next few weeks and be in hospital. So, you know, I guess that there's a long way to go. You know, we're still working on things like, free prescriptions for people with sickle cell. You know, this is a major challenge. If people have chronic illnesses, they should really get free prescriptions. You know, this is something that is not available yet universally for people who have sickle cell, and these are things that we're pushing for.
There is clearly a way to go. Now, the report, obviously, which goes into detail, and this is called Cast Aside and Forgotten. Where can people actually access this report, Philip? Where can they actually go to find out further information if they are concerned about the issue?
Absolutely. So key place to go for all matters relating to sickle cell is the Sickle Cell Society website, which is sicklecellsociety.org.uk. And also we're working with the pharmaceutical company Novartis. So it's really important. Also, you can visit Novartis, their UK website, I think novartis.com, and they have a whole page around sickle cell as well.
Well, it does seem bizarre. We have had no new treatment options for over 20 years. Suddenly something needs to be done from that point of view. Philip, I won't wish you a happy World Sickle Cell Day, because that would be just crass and hopeless from that point of view. But be well. That's the important thing. And keep you on regardless. And I'm sure we'll speak again soon. Take care now. Bye.
Thanks so much. Cheers.
So 3 years since the GDPR was brought into UK law. What you may well say is GDPR, well, it's the General Data Protection Regulation Act, in order to protect businesses across the UK, obviously. But there are still a number of issues with respect to knowing what it is in the first place, and indeed actually reporting crimes, etc. So to address this, we're delighted to welcome once again back to the joys of Siren, cybersecurity and e-crime expert from CrowdStrike, of course, the wonderful Zeki Chireddy. How are you, Zeki?
Very well, thank you, Alex. Thanks for having me again.
Good. So we've given the explanation in terms of what GDPR stands for, as we said, the General Data Protection Regulation. And I recall it sort of being given a lot of buzz when it came into place, etc. But this finding that 42% of UK businesses are not reporting data breaches is somewhat concerning, is it not?
It is. It's very much concerning. I think we have to kind of remember that over the last, you know, 3 years, there's been a lot happening when implementing GDPR. You know, some of the kind of feedback that we had from the report that we created at CrowdStrike was that a lot of organizations are actually really happy about GDPR, as it's allowed them to better prepare themselves for cyber intrusions. But similar to the stats you provided previously, we also found some concerning information and feedback, such as, you know, 1 in 10 UK businesses no longer believe GDPR applies now that UK has left the EU.
Yeah, well, a bit like getting points from the Eurovision Song Contest countries. That's obviously one of those fallacies of life. And indeed, as I say, is it one of those things where you're finding that businesses are kind of not reporting it because they think, oh, what's the point? They think it's another layer of bureaucracy, etc. I mean, do you feel that actually the sense of the importance of reporting is being lost with small businesses?
I believe it's down to education. You know, a lot of organizations probably don't understand what a data, you know, protection data breach actually is. They don't understand, you know, what level information has to be accessed by a third party, or actually how they may have mishandled that information. So really it comes down to education, but also, you know, one area could be down to not understanding who to call when a data breach has happened. We've seen through a lot of the previous fines being done in the UK by the, you know, ICO, that a lot of organizations being fined was down to being unprepared and not actually responding effectively to a data breach.
Now, as a cybersecurity and indeed e-crime expert, what is your basic advice that you would give to businesses? I mean, is the message that actually you need to change your password regularly? You need to actually adjust that. You need to actually include passwords which are difficult to guess, etc. Is it beyond that?
It is a lot beyond that. And it really comes down to making sure you understand the type of data you are collecting based on your employees and also the data from your customers, making sure you are collecting that adequately, but also most importantly, preparing yourself to protect that data continuously. And my keyword here is my biggest recommendation as well, is for all organizations to get prepared. You know, make sure you fully understand how GDPR impacts your business. Make sure you are protecting that data, but also, more importantly, know who to call on if you have had a data breach.
It's a fairly positive fact that 63% of UK businesses in this survey have acknowledged that GDPR has allowed them to prepare better for cyber intrusions, with a little over a quarter saying that they were able to minimise the impacts of a cyber breach as a result of implementing steps. So it's perhaps worth stressing, Zeki, that actually this is something which is designed to help businesses as opposed to add another burden to all sorts of things they need to get done.
That's really important to understand. You're absolutely correct. It's not just about protecting businesses and helping businesses, but it's actually also protecting, you know, your listeners, you, me as well. It's actually about protecting our data, our privacy as well.
And what would be your top tips, Zeki, in terms of people listening to this who might sort of feel they're not quite sure about the GDPR compliance and other sort of aspects? How should they actually take those first initial steps?
I think it's really simple. Again, making sure you're prepared, taking it seriously, making sure you understand the type of data you're accessing, you're collecting, and most importantly, making sure you've got security around that data as well. So protecting it.
And in terms of finding out further information about CrowdStrike and indeed the GDPR, where should they go?
Of course. So feel free to visit crowdstrike.co.uk, as well as a number of good locations on GDPR from the ICO, as well as gdpr.eu.
Do you think this is something which is going to be with us for the foreseeable future? Do you think we're ever going to get a stage whereby we don't have to worry about GDPR? I mean, I'm thinking about artificial intelligence and when that comes into play, or is it a case of, no, we need to be vigilant, just as we'd be vigilant if we were actually dealing with physical pounds, shillings and pence?
No, I actually really hope this stays for a long time. I hope this actually evolves and becomes just something that's normal for us and as businesses. So maybe GDPR will actually become less aggressive over time, because we all know that we have to provide this security on people's data just because of, you know, a good integrity, and that's what we do as part of business. But the reality is, this is down to how humans work and how our data is being handled. And yes, AI will help us do this more effectively, but we still have to have the regulations. We still have to be also people fined when they're not doing it correctly as well, and held accountable.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point you make there about the accountability. I mean, is that something, do we need to consider? Does Parliament need to consider further legislation? Is it a case of, or we just need to see whether a light touch will actually apply? Because clearly there is a sort of notion of, if there isn't any incentive, why would people bother?
Yeah, it's a really fine line. So, you know, reality is, if you are too harsh, more people will probably hide and not be open. And the core aspect of GDPR was making sure people feel approachable and happy to go and say, hey, we believe we've had an incident, and we're trying to report this within our 72-hour window. So making sure it's still open, but still that those who are not doing their job and are being held accountable is still in play. So I think it's a fine line, and I believe it's been done quite well so far today.
Zeki Chiredi, cybersecurity and e-crime expert from CrowdStrike, of course. A huge thanks. Keep on keeping on, and bye for now.
Thank you so much.